Welcome to episode 31 of Chat with a Cap. This episode is being recorded in season 7. That's the 1986-87 season following sim number 8. So right after the trade deadline, which means that for the most part, teams' rosters are finalized. At least, you know, all of the important parts are finalized. You might see someone signing a waiver player to cover for an injury toward the end of the season, but basically what you see now is what you're going to get as we go down the stretch. And we're going to take a look at what we can expect as we get to the end of the season. Since in episodes 29 and 30, I focused on the Eastern Conference and never got a chance to move over to the West, we're going to start in the Western Conference today, and we're going to start with the two, what I would call co-favorites, the Lakers, who are 43-10. They're built around, I guess, the only MVP the league has seen to date, Magic Johnson, and the Spurs, who are built around Kiki Vandeweghe, who was their prize free agent acquisition a couple of seasons ago, and a whole bunch of high young draft picks that are now coming into their own, which also means they're getting ready to get paid. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, but I'm going to start by analyzing, you know, where the Spurs are and what we can expect from them this year and in the future. The first thing I will note about the Spurs is they basically run 7 men deep. Their rotation is at the starters, Mike Gminski, Kiki Vandeweghe, Mark Aguirre, Michael Jordan, Isaiah Thomas. Byron Scott gets a ton of minutes off the bench. Mark West gets a ton of minutes off the bench. The rest of their team really doesn't play meaningful minutes. They're just in garbage time. And so, you know, as mentioned, this is a 7-man rotation. And one of the things that immediately jumped out to me as I took a look at them is that despite Isaiah's high inside score, he's not scoring a ton. He's only averaging 12.7 points and 9 assists on the season. And I think the assist numbers are suppressed a bit because he's on a team with a lot of other very good passers. Michael Jordan is averaging 8 assists a game. Aguirre is averaging 4 assists a game. Gminski 2.7. Vandeweghe 2.5. So even though Isaiah is nominally the point guard, the rest of the team does have the ball in their hands quite a bit. And the thing that I think is interesting as you look at the Spurs is Vandeweghe is in the midst of his prime at 28. Gminski is entering his prime at 27. Aguirre's entering his prime at 27. Jordan and Thomas are 24 and 25. And then Scott and West are 25 and 26. So this is a team that, if they are able to stay together, is really entering its peak window over the next 3 to 4 years. And it's also a team that I think is going to have some very tough decisions to make as they move into the future. And the reason for that is that right now this team is already over the salary cap. And next season they've got $6.4 million committed, which is likely to be under the salary cap. But, and the reason I put the but in there, is that both Byron Scott and Mark West are coming off their rookie deals, so they're no longer going to be cheap. They're going to be expensive. And then the following year, Gminski's deal is up, Vandeweghe's deal is up, Michael Jordan comes off his rookie deal. So theoretically, all three of them will be in line for a raise. So when you have a lot of players coming up for raises, it becomes a difficult time to keep your team together. So the Spurs have had a lot of success the past couple of seasons. And I anticipate even if they lose one or two players, they are going to have success into the future. The question will be, whom do they have to lose and when do they have to lose them? I do think that despite Byron Scott and Mark West hitting restricted free agency this season, if a team offers them enough money, I think the Spurs have to at least consider letting them walk, because both of those guys are good enough to be a starter on most other teams, but on the Spurs, they are backups. And can you pay your backup starter money? I don't believe the answer is yes. So If I were a team going into RFA and I had cap space to spend on other people's RFAs, I would be trying to put the pinch on the Spurs by going after Byron or Mark West. Are you going to be able to get them? That's not guaranteed. But again, I think the Spurs have to at least think about it. Alternatively, you might watch for them to try to make a trade in the offseason. I think the two most likely candidates for trade are Kiki Vandeweghe and Mike Gminski. And the reason I say that is because most owners tend to have extra attachment to players that they drafted. You feel, I started at the beginning with this guy, this is my guy. You feel a little more, I think, possessive of people that you drafted than people that you signed in free agency, in the case of Vandeweghe, or traded for in Gminski. I don't know why it is. It's a psychological thing, but everybody seems to like keeping, you know, their own guys, the guys that they picked, to being able to keep somebody who maybe you acquired. You think, oh, he's a hired gun. You know, it really is a psychological thing. So we saw the Spurs trying desperately this year to shop Byron Scott around and get a return. They didn't get anything, and I think that's telling that they shopped him, because what it means is the Spurs know that they're going to go into free agency and they're going to be forced to make the tough choice. Do we want to match the contract to Byron Scott, or do we want to pay him? And I know there are some owners, I think Darth Vegito is probably the most vocal of them, that is of the opinion that you should always pay your players now, easy for me to say, and figure things out later, because you never want to lose an asset for nothing. And I know I've been on this podcast before saying that one of the important skills of GMing is knowing when it is time to let go of a player, whether that be for age reasons, for fit reasons, for contract reasons. It's difficult if you get sentimental, and especially if you think, oh, someone else will value him at the level that I do. We've seen with some of the complaints from Griepel out of Golden State that that may not be the case. And so if people do not value the player at the same level that you do, you may be stuck sitting with a player that you didn't really want. You held on to the player or acquired the player as an asset to flip, assuming somebody else was going to like that asset as well. And now you're stuck with a player that you really don't want, but you also don't want to just let them go for what you consider pennies on the dollar. And so you could be stuck with a player that is not exactly the player that you want. And I think it's an interesting dilemma to be in, because the biggest time where this decision becomes difficult is in that transition from a rookie contract to an RFA contract, because rookie contracts, I think just about everybody likes for the most part. They're relatively small. You always feel, why would I want to get rid of this guy? He's good value. Once a player reaches the point where they're eligible for free agency, and now you have to ask yourself, is this a max player? And if the answer is no, then, okay, at what level do I think this player should be paid? And then when RFA comes around, if someone else has made a different evaluation on this player, and I'm just going to pull a number out of my head here, let's say you think he is worth half of a max, and someone else offers him, and he signs, to three-quarters of a max, then you have to ask yourself, okay, do I want to spend three-quarters of a max, have that on my books, be unable to move him this season, and potentially unable to move him in the future, because as we've all seen, especially with Parrish, the reason that people tend to shy away from players who talent-wise are fits is contract. And so you've gone from having a player on a very desirable contract to a player on a less desirable contract. I think just about everybody would agree, even if you're not paying a max for a player, you would rather be paying him rookie scale wages than free market wages. It's just cheaper that way. And so this is where the Spurs find themselves. This season, I think their seven-man rotation is deep. Is it deep enough to get by the Lakers? It's a good question. I think that's going to be a very fun matchup. They're both going to have byes. I think if they make it to the conference finals, it's going to be a slugfest. I think they can match up with the Lakers. Michael Jordan is really coming into his powers. He's averaging about 22 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. He's the second most well-rounded player in the league. The most well-rounded player, of course, is Magic Johnson. But I do think that the Spurs are committed to building around Aguirre, Jordan, and Thomas. Gaminsky and Vandeweghe, I think, are probably seen as hired guns. I think they're going to be jettisoned the moment that they start becoming less useful. I don't think that's this offseason. I think both of them are still young enough. But again, after next season, there's going to be some hard questions. They're probably still max players this season. And then their contracts run out and they're going to be entering their age 29 and age 30 seasons. And the question is, are they a max player at that point? And if so, for how many seasons will they be a max player? We're already seeing guys that formerly, I think, were locks to be maxes, and we'll talk about some of them later, coming to the point where not only are their contracts a little worse than you would like, they're becoming active albatrosses around teams' necks. So the Spurs have done a good job in building young, building cheap through draft picks, and now they're coming to the point where they're going to have to start paying real money to keep their team together. And I just don't know that they're going to have enough to go around. So anyone who is attempting to snipe this year may be looking at West and Byron Scott in restricted free agency simply on the fact that even though Byron Scott is probably better than your starting shooting guard, he's not better than Easy's starting shooting guard, who's Michael Jordan. And so you probably have to value Byron Scott higher than Easy does. I don't think Easy is going to value Byron as a max player. You might. And so if you sign him to a max, then that's going to put Easy in the position of deciding, okay, I like Byron. Do I like him this much? And when I talk about Easy here, this is something that can be said for everybody else. You may be of the opinion that Byron Scott is not a max player. And then, of course, is the question, well, let's say I can sign him for half of a max. Well, remember that at that point, Easy can match. So this is where the RFA game becomes really interesting. You want to pay enough that the other team is going to let him go. The incumbent team doesn't want to match it. But you also don't want to pay so much that you're not sure you want to pay it going forward. Nothing is worse than grabbing an asset just to grab an asset. Again, as we talked about before with Darth's philosophy on pay the players and don't let them go and figure out the trades later, that doesn't always happen. And so you always have to keep in mind, you know, even if I have to overpay for a player to keep him, how much am I willing to overpay? And you need to have that number probably before you go into RFA, because what that will let you do is that will let you take a look at the amount the player eventually signs for. Hopefully you're not offering more than that amount, but if somebody else signs him to that amount, you will know immediately, okay, am I willing to let him walk or do I want to match him? And I would suggest to anyone that has a restricted free agent that that's a very important thing to settle on with yourself is, where would I like to pay this player? Where can I tolerate paying this player? And where is too much for me to pay this player? And again, I'm just going to continue picking on Byron Scott. You might want to pay Byron Scott half of a max slot. You might say, I could tolerate paying him 3/4 of a max slot. And you might say, there's no way I'm going to pay him a full max. Then there's degrees within that. If he actually signs for 76%, even though you said 75%, are you going to hold the line at 1%? What are you going to do? Obviously, it's easy when it's way over the line. It's harder when it's way close. The other thing is, do you try to bluff? Oh, yeah, I'll keep him unless you pay me something. So it's always something to keep in mind is, this is when the mind games happen, is during restricted free agency and trying to figure out, what does the other person want? What is their I will pay anything player, what is there? I will pay X amount. Where's that line? Have you crossed it? Have they crossed it? So it's the fun game of chicken, as it were. And I think the Spurs are going to be in the middle of that for the next 2 years. Looking over at the Lakers, who are the other big contender, the Lakers are also a very tight rotation team. They're running Eaton at center, Donaldson at power forward, Lister at small forward, Magic and Dantley at the guards, and bringing Paul Pressey off the bench. They may adjust this, especially in the wake of the Eaton injury, but those are really their six players. They don't give David Thompson or Lionel Hollins much time. In fact, they don't give Paul Pressey much time either. So it will be, I mean, comparatively, he does more than the rest of the bench squad, but when everybody else is on your team is playing 30-plus minutes per game and Pressey's playing 17, it speaks to the fact that he is the sixth man out of your starting five. And we will see if the Lakers are able to hold on to that number one seed. Right now, they're dealing with injuries to Eaton. Speaking of Eaton, this is another player that was a restricted free agent, did not quite sign a max deal. Looks to me, just eyeballing it, he might have gotten about 75% of what the max was. The issue, at least from my perspective, is the contract length. Yes, Eaton was coming off his rookie deal, but Eaton was an old rookie. He's already 30. I think he was drafted at 26, which means theoretically he's already going to be in decline in training camp over the next few years. And I'm not sure I want to pay three quarters of a max to a player who is in decline 3 years from now when he's still declining. The Lakers are a little bit older than the Spurs. Magic is 27. Everybody else is between the ages of 28 and 30, at least among their, you know, rotation players, except for Dantley, who's 31. And so the Lakers are really in that win now mode, and it shows because they're over the cap for the second year. I suspect the Lakers plan on staying over the cap until such time as Magic leaves them via free agency. The luxury tax bill gets to the point where they can't pay it and they're forced to drop back. Or, and this is just my guessing here, the end of the 1988 season. James Donaldson has a player option. Adrian Dantley has a team option. Paul Pressey has a team option. I can see the Lakers deciding that 1988 is the time to reset things and dumping Dantley's option, dumping Pressey's option, and hoping that James Donaldson dumps his option, and also hoping that Magic doesn't dump his. The Lakers do not have any really tough personnel decisions to make. Their core six are locked in. They're probably going to get help from the salary cap going up, so they won't be as far over the cap next season. They'll probably have access to the MLE. If they use that, they'll be able to add talent. The concern for me, such as it is for the Lakers, is that they don't have their own first-round pick this year, so they don't have cheap depth. They're going to have to rely on veteran minimum deals to get the job done around their core six. Or they're going to have to trade one of their core six. I think this season the Lakers are probably the favorites to win the title. I think next season the Lakers are the favorites to win the title. After that, it's a real crapshoot. And the reason why is Magic has a player option. So Magic really wanted to throw the league into chaos. He could decline that option, and we're not going to know that until the offseason hits. And so teams that are trying to plan on when they want cap space after this upcoming season is probably not ideal. And the other side to that is two seasons from now could be a lot better. But if Magic and James Donaldson both decide to stay with the Lakers to exercise that player option, you don't want to burn your powder in 1988 because you know for sure they'll be up for grabs in 1989. So teams that are looking to poach the Lakers players really have to build in a two-year window in which they want to keep their salaries low. And it's always easy to do a reset to 1 year. What it's hard to do is restrain yourself during that 1 year and not sign long-term large contracts to keep yourself open the next year. And I think that's going to be especially true because now as we go forward, this was mentioned on some previous Chat with the Cats, we're now getting to the point where 4 years of rookie contracts have gotten full contracts. All of our dispersal or creation draft contracts are off the books, meaning everybody is being paid at market rates and the market is drying up. So in a year, when you come in with a lot of money, you can make a lot of moves and you can get a lot of change done with your roster. But that's probably going to mean long-term money means you're not going to be able to reinvent yourself every year. You might have to reinvent yourself every 3 years or so. The other thing the Lakers are dealing with right now is that Mark Eaton has a dislocated shoulder. That's going to throw their lineup into a little bit of disarray. I don't think it's awful. Donaldson has proven to be fine as a center. So they, you know, Alistair is fine as a center. So they probably just slide one of those two guys up in the center slot. They put Dantley back at small forward, or they put Magic at small forward. Whichever one they don't put a small forward, they put a shooting guard, and then they start Pressey, and that gives them a very quality starting lineup until Eaton gets back. Even if they're a little thin on the bench, they're just going to run people off the floor with their starters, so the bench won't really matter. I do think it's interesting, as I mentioned before, the Lakers are in the repeater tax this year. They're very likely to be in the repeater tax next year unless they make significant team-building moves to drop their salary, which I don't think they're willing to do. And maybe, you know, with Magic in his prime, with Donaldson in his prime, with Lister in his prime, with Dantley leaving his prime, with Pressey in his prime, with Eaton in his prime, now is not the time to get cheap and start scrimping on paying luxury tax. You have a team that has shown they are one of the favorites. They came up just short last season. They're leading the pack in terms of win percentage and point differential this season. This is a team that's a contending team right now. And conventional wisdom is you pay what you need to pay during your championship contention window. And then when you go into a dry spell, that's fine because you have the opportunity to gun for the championship, and that's essentially the cost of doing business. So that's where I think the Spurs and Lakers are going to go. As I mentioned, I think the Spurs have a lot of interesting decisions in this offseason. I think the Lakers will have a lot of interesting decisions two offseasons from now. The other thing I see the Lakers looking to do sooner rather than later is try to find some ways to get younger. They have been consistently selling off draft picks, offering points, trying to get players in their prime to help them compete now. And again, with Dantley at 31, we're starting to see the signs of age creep in. We're probably going to see it more next season. Eaton is going to start falling off, and then Donaldson will start falling off. And then we'll be getting to the point where, you know, 3-4 seasons from now, Magic is going to start being in decline. And the Lakers have benefited from a Magic Johnson that is extraordinary. He's the most well-rounded player in the league, shoots an amazing percentage. What do you do when he goes into decline? And more importantly, the fact that he hits free agency maybe right before he goes into decline, do you attempt to pay him? If so, are you going to wind up overpaying him? If not, are you going to risk losing him? If you get him for a number you like, what happens if he stays alive longer? Great. What happens if he starts decaying faster? Probably not great. So the Lakers, I think, have a path forward. They're going to be a little bit at the mercy of the sim gods in terms of A, how their players age, and B, whether or not their players decide to exercise their contract options. But if nothing else, I think the Lakers are the favorites for the next two seasons if they want to be. Obviously, next season they could always pull a Doug and trade everything off. But I would put the Lakers as the leaders right now for this season, assuming they stay healthy, which given injuries to Eaton is not necessarily a great assumption. So I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to grab something to drink, and then we'll be back to talk about the rest of the West.
I am quite dissatisfied with the Emperor's breakfast cereal. It is so cold and impersonal.
Whoa! Hey, Kung Fu! Put down your chopsticks and grab a spoonful of my latest cereal, Fruity Choco Rice Balls, with little green nunchucks, purple throwing stars, and red kimonos!
This cereal, it is delicious. It makes me want to do a roundhouse kick. Chuck Lee, you are truly the master of the breakfast world. I bow before you as a sign of ultimate respect.
Rule number one, Grasshopper, never let your guard down. Hi-ya! Hey! Ready! Domo arigato, buddy. Got a motor.
Thanks for calling the Movie Ending Phone. Press 1 for a brief introduction to our service. Press 2 if you know which movie you'd like to hear the ending to. Press 3 for movies near you that are almost over. We understand that you don't have time to sit in a dark movie theater with people you don't know. That's where the Movie Ending Phone comes in. Just press the number on your touchtone pad that corresponds to the movie you wish you had seen. The defendant in Primal Fear is just faking it. Why deal with high admission prices, bad popcorn, and sticky floors? Steve Buscemi ends up in a wood chipper. Why let the person next to you ruin the movie for you when you can do it yourself? The killers in Scream are the boyfriends. Let your friends talk about all the movies they want. You'll never have to cover your ears again. Kevin Spacey is Kaiser Soze. And he's the killer in Seven, the movie ending phone. You'll never have to leave the house again. Darth Vader is still Luke's father.
Alrighty, we are back. I'm going to take a look at the rest of the West after our two leaders. We're going to start with, I think there is a significant teardrop to the Trailblazers, who are currently sitting third in the West, and then another drop to the Warriors, Clippers, Jazz, Mavericks, probably not the Nuggets, but the teams that are fighting for the next couple of playoff spots. There's probably a significant step from the Trailblazers to the Warriors and a significant step from the Warriors to the rest of the teams out there. I usually don't like talking about Portland, but I'm going to use my team for a moment to illustrate something that I talked about earlier, and that is trying to hang on to an asset for the sake of the asset and attempting to assume that people are going to value the asset in the same way that you value it. And in specific here, I'm going to talk about Alex English. There was some talk by, trade analysis out of the Boston Celtics that they didn't like the trade that I made at the beginning of the season, wherein Phil Hubbard and Bill Cartwright went out, and coming in were Alex English and a draft pick. That draft pick was later flipped, basically. That became Roy Tarpley, along with John Konkak and Orlando Woolridge, for Steve Johnson and a couple of seconds. So really, if you trace that pick back, Bill Cartwright became Steve Johnson and Alex English. Obviously, I'm holding on to Steve Johnson. I like that asset. Alex English I acquired as an asset that I assumed other teams would like. And even though I didn't start him, I made sure I was giving him plenty of playing time so that his abilities could be featured. And this goes back to the comment that I made earlier that it is difficult to value an asset where you have talent on a large contract. I think I valued English more highly than other teams did. In fact, I know I did based on some of the conversations I had with trade talks around the league. And I will admit that I felt I was fortunate toward the end of the trading period to find a trading partner with whom I could drop the salary for English to drop me under the luxury tax. So I was holding on to an asset that I knew was a little bit overpriced in hopes of getting stuff for it. I did not get the return I was expecting, or perhaps the return I would say I was hoping for initially. I got what I felt was a decent return under the circumstances, but I will admit I overvalued where people liked Alex English. And I'm going to pivot later to another player that I don't think I overvalued a couple of seasons ago, and we'll talk about that. But basically, the point is, I felt pressure to move Alex English for perhaps less than I would have valued him at because of his cap because of my cap situation and his cap hold. I did get the Blazers under the luxury tax, but I did not also get the return on investment that I would have liked for Alex. And so I think that's something to remember as you're going to hand out contracts or you're making acquisitions. Never pick up a player under the assumption that I'll be able to flip him for this particular amount. You can pick up a player to flip him, but don't have in your head that I'm definitely going to be able to get this amount for him. In my experience, you generally get 50 to 75 cents on the dollar of what you think that player is when you wind up going to move him. Having said that, and again, use that illustratively because it's somebody that I was familiar with and that I think it was pretty obvious. I had it listed on my trade block from pretty much, well, I guess day 60, that he was available and I was looking to move him. And the return that I got was not what I expected. Let's move on to the Warriors. The Warriors, I think, did a nice job this season repivoting, rebuilding around Tom Chambers. I loved their Calvin Knapp pickup midseason. I like the Jeff Ruland pickup. Basically, I think the Warriors have done a terrific job rebuilding on the fly. They did have a bit of a down season last season, but they're now back. They no longer have the Moses Malone, Robert Parrish Twin Towers, but Parrish is still there, and now they've got Tom Chambers manning their power forward spot, and I think we're going to see the Warriors be a tough out in the playoffs. I anticipate that the Spurs and Lakers are going to be the number one seed and two seed. The Trailblazers and Warriors will be the three and four seeds, meaning the only way I'm going to meet the Warriors is if we meet in the conference finals, and if that happens, I will be happy about it because it'll mean I don't have to deal with the Lakers or the Spurs there. But the Warriors have done a good job of pivoting on the fly. The one thing I will say about their team is, you know, Chambers is going into his prime at 27. Parrish is past his prime at 33. Ruland is 28 in his prime. Rodney McRae, I'm not sure how they're planning on using him. He's only 25. But Calvin Knapp and Michael Cooper are 30. John Bagley's 26. So this is a team, again, much like the Lakers, composed of players that are in their primes or maybe just exiting or entering their primes. So the Warriors' window is now, which is really impressive when you consider that they pivoted off of most of their roster from two seasons ago. It's not quite as quick a rebuilding job as the Bucks did around Kevin McHale, but it's still really good. So I want to make sure I give Greeple his flowers for that. The thing that the Warriors are going to have to look out for as they move forward is, number one, do they exercise the team option on Robert Parrish, or do they expose him to free agency and lose him for not even 15 points if somebody else goes to grab him? I think the answer is yes, and the reason I think so is I think, you know, as I mentioned, it's never a good idea to hold on to an asset where the contract is bigger than it should be in the hopes you're going to get something that you like for them. I would think that if a trade for Parrish was going to have materialized, it would have materialized already. So if I am a betting man, I am betting that Greeple declines the contract on Robert Parrish, that Parrish will be exposed to unrestricted free agency. So if you've always wanted Robert Parrish, now is the time to earmark some money to go get him. The caveat is that's the only player that Greipel's really probably worried about. Mark Olberding is not a player that he's worried about. And so next season, he's already got his squad locked in. If he can use either his draft pick, the Lakers draft pick, some combination thereof, some sort of trade to fill the Robert Parrish spot. Now, I suspect he's going to move Rulon to be his starting center. Knapp becomes your starting small forward. Cooper, your shooting guard. Bagley, your point guard. So that means he's set along his starters and even his sixth man in James Bailey. So, he's not going to feel pressure to overpay on Parrish, but he's probably also not going to need to undercut him. He'll know exactly what number he wants to give to Parrish. If he can get it, great. If not, he's set up to let him go and use that money elsewhere. So I think the Warriors are in very good shape for this coming off season. And I think they're going to be they may not be able to catch Lakers and Spurs. I'm not sure anybody can until age starts eating away at them. But he's certainly going to be in the mix with the Trailblazers next season for the playoffs. Then we get to the tier of teams that are all fighting for the 5 and 6 spots. That's the Clippers, the Jazz, and the Mavericks. Right now they're separated by a game and a half. The Clippers are 29 and 25. The Jazz are 29 and 27. The Mavericks are 28 and 27. And the Mavericks, I think, are underperforming a little bit as far as their record goes due to injuries. Sam Bowie has already missed 7 games. He's out for this sim, so that's probably another few games that he's going to miss. And the Mavericks had been pretty solid until Bowie got hurt, and that's when they've kind of gone into a swoon. They have gone, 3-4 over their last 7. And so that's kind of dropped them out from the 5 spot down to the 7 spot now in the playoffs. They're probably looking to ride things out this next sim until he comes back and then make a push. And I suspect that they thought they had their opportunity when Mike Mitchell broke his leg for the Clippers. And they're probably, I won't say they're cursing me because honestly, I didn't do it. I had agreed in principle to a trade with the Bullets to get rid of English, and they asked, hey, do you mind if I shop English around to see if I can get a third team involved? And I said, not at all. This goes back to one of the questions on Discord, is it sus for a team to tell you, hey, I've got a third team involved, not telling you what it is? I think it depends on context. I was basically, we have the framework of a deal. I am fine with it. If you want to go out and find a third team to involve, I've already reached a deal that I am willing to accept. And so if they can get something out of it, great. And so they were able to go out and find the Clippers, who had just lost Mike Mitchell to injury, and say, hey, would you like Alex English instead? And so I'm sure the Mavericks were a bit disappointed to see that Mike Mitchell out, Alex English in. English stepped right into the starting lineup this past sim for the Clippers. And I think he plugged in rather nicely. Just eyeballing it, it looks like he averaged a little over 20 points a game. And I think the Clippers are going to take that. That's pretty much the production that they were missing. And so they're able to move on without missing a beat. And so had you asked me before that trade which team that I think was going to lose out, I think it would have been the Clippers simply due to the injury factor. Now I'm not sure it's not the Mavericks. I haven't touched on the Jazz yet. They're kind of in the middle of all this. The thing about the Jazz is they made a very significant move to pick up Ralph Sampson. I'm not sure that move has worked out the way that they would like. And the reason that I say that is when they went out and got Ralph, they did so, I think, under the assumption that that was going to be the move that suddenly catapulted them on a winning streak. They picked him up on the 16th of January in game, which means they faced the Sonics and won, the Spurs and won, then they lost at the Rockets, won at the Suns and Kings, lost, won. So if you look at their aggregate record over that time, they have gone 10-10. So they have not maybe it's 11 and 10, but basically they're running right about 500. When they made the trade, they were 18 and 17. In other words, they're not really seeing the needle move with the addition of Ralph Sampson, which could be a function of a tough schedule, or it could just be a function of, is Ralph Sampson a superstar caliber player that moves the needle for a team? There has been a lot of ink spilled over the years about Sampson's superstar status. And to me, I think watching the Jazz and seeing how they work with Ralph now at the focal point of their offense, has he made them significantly better? I am not sure the answer is yes. And again, I'm saying that based solely on look at the record before, look at the record after. Ralph hasn't suddenly catapulted them on a winning streak. He hasn't allowed them to get separation in a playoff race that's very, very tight. And so you would expect if he really did move the needle that he would be able to do that. And so if you're going to ask me which team falls out of the playoff race, I think the Clippers are in. I'll start with that. Because I look at their road record, they're 12 and 14. That's the best of any of the three teams that are vying for the spots. And they made a very wise move to replace Mike Mitchell. So I think they're going to be able to move on without skipping a beat. The Jazz made their move for Ralph Sampson, but it hasn't helped them take off. The Mavericks are going to get Sam Bowie back. They're just kind of treading water this sim until he's back. And before Bowie tanked it, they were on a course to be a little bit better, I think, than the Jazz. So the other thing to look at is the Mavericks have played 31 road games and 24 home games, meaning they're going to have seven more home games down the stretch, which they're more likely to win. That's what I think gives them the inside track on the Jazz. We'll see if the Jazz are able to hold it together and make that win, but I think the Clippers, Jazz, Mavericks race for 5-6 and out of the playoffs is probably the most interesting race to watch in the West. If I'm looking at futures on these teams, the Clippers are interesting to me simply because they theoretically could roll this squad back next season. However, it's a very expensive squad. I'm going to guess that they decline Alex English's team option and try to bring him back at a lower number. So kind of like we were talking about earlier with Robert Parrish, there's going to be an opportunity to get an older player who's still very, very good if you're willing to pay a little more than maybe you'd like. Now, is that wise to do? I'm not going to tell you whether or not it's wise to do. I think on a cheap contract, these players are valuable. On a max contract, these players are albatrosses. The correct number is somewhere in between, but I think this could be a very interesting free agency because there will be older talent available and they're not going to be automatically maxed. And given the Clippers' salary cap from their spending spree a couple of seasons ago, it may be that they're willing to let Alex go for a lower number than you might think. Or they may try to sign him and trade him. And again, we talked about the caveats of doing that. From the Jazz have built young. Ralph Sampson is coming up for RFA. You have to think, given what the Jazz gave up for him, they're going to match any RFA offers. Craig Elo is coming up for RFA. I don't think Elo has shown himself to be a star caliber player. For his career, he's averaging 11 points in 30 minutes. This season, he's averaging 11.4. What I do think he's growing into is a solid rotation player. He's a good starter, not a great starter. And I'm interested to see in restricted free agency this offseason, what's the market for that? Ralph Sampson, I think, is he's an all-star center. So is he going to get a max or close to it? I think the answer is yes. A player like Craig Elo, who has no significant weaknesses, is still getting better, but is not a star. What's his value? I don't know. And so I'm fascinated to watch and see what does the market tell us this year about guys like Elo. How much is he going to command? But the Jazz, by and large, are young, and they've got a very solid team. I could see them letting Mike Sanders' option be declined. I'm sure they're going to decline Wayne Cooper's option. So they're going to have cap space to match these guys. And so unlike some of the other RFAs I've mentioned, Sampson and Elo are probably not guys that you're going to be able to get, but I think they're guys you should try to offer on. What's the saying? Hashtag make them pay. Because what you don't want to see is you don't want them getting an under market contract. Mike Sanders is being paid like a max player. I don't think he is a max player. He's good. He's averaging 15 points a game, but he's only averaging 4 boards, a couple of assists, 4 fouls. He's the kind of player that I think, he's maybe a step up from Elo, but he's not a max player. So he's going to get declined. And again, watching the market for Elo and watching the market for Sanders are going to be a little bit different because one is unrestricted, one's restricted. Elo is 25. Sanders is 26. So a little bit older, but not that much older. This gives us an opportunity to see where the league is valuing that kind of fourth, fifth starter, top bench guy in terms of how much are you going to pay that guy. And then lastly, with the Mavericks, obviously, Sam Bowie is still under contract for another year. But Marcus Johnson and Walter Davis are coming off fairly large contracts. The Mavericks are going to have the ability to reload this year. I think it will be to their advantage to pick up some additional size. I also think that so far it's been an interesting experiment with Spud Webb. And I say that based on, Spud's been given the starting role over Johnny Dawkins. I'm not entirely convinced he deserves it. He's shooting 42% from the field. He's averaging 7.5 assists, and he's only averaging 10 points a game. Can Dawkins do better? I'm not convinced he can't, and I do think it's interesting if you look at their PER. Now, granted, Dawkins is doing this in limited minutes. Dawkins' PER is 13.2, Spud's is 12.7. Now, one could argue Dawkins is playing against backups, and so that makes his numbers look better, but I think Spud Webb is a fun player to watch. I'm not sure I want him as my full-time point guard just because of the size. It's something that I think bears watching with Keep It 100 is what does he do with that point guard situation? I don't think either Dawkins or Spud is really capable of playing shooting guard. They have Brad Davis now, but he's 31 years old. And, he's got under contract for next season and then a team option after that. I can see the pivot to trying to build around Dawkins, Webb, and Bowie. Lambeer, he's the odd one out in terms of contract. He's a long-term contract, which is fine, but he's also a player that's 29. He doesn't fit the Bowie, Dawkins, Webb timeline. But he's still plenty productive. He's still in his prime. If I'm the Mavericks, I think he is the player that I need to consider moving now to get a lot of value for him before his value decreases. And yes, it probably gives my team a step back because I'm going to have to get younger and more raw pieces. But it also gives me pieces for a timeline that works around Bowie, Dawkins, and Webb. Look for the Mavericks to be very active in free agency. I can see the Mavericks with all their cap space putting some tough offers in on restricted free agents. So I think the Mavericks will have a pretty significant say in how the offseason goes and where the market gets set for a lot of players. Let's jump over to the Nuggets. This is a team that is still On the Rise. They've paired together Daryl Griffith and Clyde Drexler. I tend to agree with the review banana, as it were. Griffith may be listed as Purple Purple. He produces well, but I don't know that he's all around rounded enough to be a Purple Purple, or at least to be paid like a Purple Purple or thought of as a Purple Purple. Drexler doesn't score to the degree that Griffith does, but he's a better rebounder, a much better passer, and I think that the Drexler era is coming. Maybe they're trying to make it the Drexler-Griffith era, which will probably work. I do worry that Griffith is in his prime. Drexler's still getting there. The thing with the Nuggets is, outside of Drexler, pretty much all of their rotation players are in their prime or just exiting it. They're all 28, 29. James Edwards is 31. Drexler's 24. My question is, when do the Nuggets start to pivot from win now, which, if you look at their record, hasn't worked this season, to build around Drexler? I think the squad that they have now has pieces other teams would find desirable. I don't think, other than Drexler, they're going to get appreciably better. So, since your team is not good enough now, no offense, but the record, your record says you are, you're 5 games under .500. Is it time to start pivoting off some of these older pieces and moving on from them? And this is another team that I think has some interesting decisions to make in the offseason. Daryl Griffith is going to be up for contract renewal. Clyde Drexler is up for RFA. Somebody's going to max him. James Edwards comes off the books. Larry Smith comes off the books. It's a team that's ready for a reset. I think they have to max Clyde. He's their future. We've talked about several players that are going to be restricted free agents that are very, very good, that are going to command high salaries. I think Griffith is one that's going to command a high salary. And the question is, can the Nuggets find a sign-and-trade for him? I think that should be their top priority in the offseason, is finding a sign-and-trade partner for Griffith that's going to get them younger, that's going to get them depth, that's going to get them draft picks, so that they can start building around a Drexler timeline. Then we hit the Rockets. 78 continues to 78. We're not seeing a lot of movement out of the Rockets. Otis Birdsong is hurt, but looking at the Rockets, they're an eclectic mix. Patrick Ewing is 24. Chuck Person is 22. Vern Fleming, 25. That's their future. Their present is Frank Johnson, 28. Otis Birdsong, 31. Larry Bird, 30. Hank McDowell, 27. It's a team that's trying to have both its future and its present, and doing neither one well. I really hope that 78 checks back in and gives this team direction, because it seems like this is a team that just kind of accumulates pieces with no plan. They get younger pieces because that's who they draft. They renew contracts on older pieces, but they're never actually pulling together and making a concerted move. The thing is, I have to think that at 30, Larry Bird is probably aging out of the point where you can get a significant return for him, which means this team really needs to start figuring out how they're going to build around the combination of Chuck Person and Patrick Ewing and maybe Vern Fleming. And I could be remembering wrong, but I think Chuck Person and Vern Fleming were building blocks on the old Indiana Pacers in real life. So maybe that is where the Rockets should look to start picking up pieces and start working around the team. Ewing has been great, but he's not gotten the help that he needs. And honestly, on this team, I think the biggest position of need is point guard. Frank Johnson was their surprise pick a few seasons ago. He's averaging 8 assists per game, 12 points per game. It's just not enough. Chuck Person and Vern Fleming are not exciting starters. They're going to get better. Frank Johnson is not an exciting starter who's not going to get better. I think this season the Rockets would really love to win the lottery and maybe pick Kevin Johnson in the draft. They could go with Kenny Smith. They could go with Mark Jackson. They could go with Muggsy Bogues. They could even go with Scottie Pippen and play him at point guard. I mean, there are a lot of options at point guard. I think the Rockets need to seriously consider one. It's a team that just kind of is there. And until 78 gets active again, they're just going to kind of continue to be stuck in purgatory. Looking at the Supersonics, David went through a sell-off of most of his pieces. He's still got Ed Pinckney, who he sank some points into. He's still got Nate McMillan, who I think has the potential to turn into a defensive beast in the future. And those are probably his main building blocks. I don't think he's really worried about his record this season. He's got his own draft picks coming up, so he's going into a rebuild for sure. He's done a good job of picking up a lot of guys with team options, you know, like Pat Cummings, Kenny Carr, Ron Brewer, Stan Pikovits, whose broken leg means that's almost certainly coming out the books. So even though right now he's listed as having $4.2 million in salary committed next season, he's going to cut all those guys. He's really going to have about $2.2 million next season. So he is going to be the biggest threat on the free agent market for getting guys. And I think he's entering a fairly rich free agency period if he wants to go after guys. So look for the Supersonics to make waves in free agency. Likewise, you've got the Kings, who basically sold everything off for spare parts. I would expect they'll be shopping Larry Drew, but they're not going to be bringing him back. They have a plethora of draft picks. They have a lot of cap space. I think if Darth is not able to get someone in with his cap space, he'll be looking instead to use it as a cap space dump for maybe one of these teams that we've talked about before, sign somebody to a contract that maybe they don't want to sign him to, but they feel like they don't want to lose the asset for nothing. The big need, and I think I've mentioned this before in some of the town halls for the Kings, they got to get rebounding. Detlef Schrempf can't be your best rebounder. You know, Johnny Newman has an 11 in defensive rebounding. They need more beef up front. It's that simple. Darth knows it. He was trying to get Roy Tarpley, wasn't able to do it. This season, I think he'll have the opportunity to go after it. And I think he's going to prioritize that in the draft. You know, Mark Price was definitely the pick he wanted last year. I know he likes having a solid point guard. Price is great, but Darth needs beef. Finally, in the West, there's the Suns. I'm surprised with the Suns. John Stockton is starting to grow into his passing and steal potential. Karl Malone made the All-Star team. Brad Doherty is a good piece. There's a really good core there. I'm not sure why they haven't come together yet. I mean, I think Malone already has the scoring chops. Brad Doherty is a decent rebounder and defender. John Stockton is already in his Super Saiyan form in terms of passing and stealing. So the question to me is really, how is this team, I'm not going to say a playoff team, but how is this team sitting on just, what is it, seven wins at this point in the season? They're 7-48. And I think the answer is World Be Free. World Be Free has taken more shots than anybody on the team, and he's shooting 42%. This was one of the big pieces they got back in the Magic Johnson trade, and I guess the best thing I can say about World is he's helped get John Stockton, Karl Malone, and Brad Doherty over to the Suns. The one other player I want to talk about on the Suns, and I've kind of been hinting at this as we're going through, is Dan Roundfield. Dan Roundfield is finally coming off a contract that's been paying him near max money for several years. Those of you who were around when Rownfield hit free agency the first time may remember that he was coming off of a season where the Trailblazers had just fallen short in the playoffs. He was a player that I had traded for late in the season at the trade deadline, trying to get a little more beef to match up with the Moses Malone, Robert Parrish Warriors. Didn't wind up being the difference. And when free agency came around, he elected to leave me and sign with the Hawks for a very large amount of money. Of course, I was disappointed, but I had also noticed that when I added him, my winning percentage only increased a couple of points. So he wasn't a key player, and I couldn't pay him like he was. And the following seasons, he went from blue-blue to green-green. He's now yellow-yellow. And he's a guy that, if you were to talk to Dr. Kavarga, I'm pretty sure nobody ever even looked at in trade talks. This was a guy that was, that four seasons ago was absolutely amazing, was a guy that everybody wanted. And now you probably at that salary would have a hard time giving him away without attaching a valuable asset. So he, I think, is the poster child to me for players that get paid more than you would like and then don't have the value that you wish they did. Obviously, he made it from the Hawks over to the Suns, but that was pretty much the end of the run. And it, again, is just an illustration of once a guy declines and is making a huge amount of money, he's almost impossible to move. Nobody's ever impossible, but it's close. The Suns, I think, are well set up for next season. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to use their draft pick this season to get a wing. They could get a small forward and move Trent Tucker down to shooting guard. They could go for a shooting guard. But I really think they're probably going to try to move World Be Free to the bench to start getting John Stockton and Karl Malone and Brad Doherty some wins. And then they'll probably decline the third and final year of World Be Free's contract extension and just let him go. So World has done his job of helping them win the lottery, but I think it's now time for them to look past that. I don't think they're going to get much, if anything, for him for trade. They might have to throw him in for salary if somebody's trying to do a salary match on a salary dump. But, again, the Suns, I think, are well positioned. They don't have a ton committed outside of World in ridiculous salary next season. So they're going to be players in free agency. They are going to pick up another nice young player in the draft. So I think they're a couple of steps ahead of the Sonics in terms of their rebuild because they've already got their young pieces in place. Even though they're worse than the Sonics and Kings now, I kind of foresee the Suns bouncing back faster, or maybe I'll say sooner, than those two teams because they already have plenty of building blocks in place. And so if you're asking me who is the team that I think is going to be threatening for the Western Conference title in about 5 years, I think the Suns are the most likely team to be doing that at that point. The Spurs core is going to be on their third contracts and they'll be in their 30s. The Lakers core will have aged out. The Kings and Sonics still haven't put things together. The Clippers and Mavericks and the cores that are currently in their prime or just entering it will be coming out of their prime, and these guys will be just entering it. So that's kind of where I see the West going. Little bit of draft preview, a little bit of playoff preview. I can see the Warriors making a push to catch the Trailblazers, but I think the Trailblazers stick in the three spot. I think the Lakers and Spurs are 1 and 2, Warriors 4. If you ask me who I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be the Clippers 5 and the Mavericks 6. I think the Mavericks are able to get back on track once Bowie comes back, but I think that gives the Clippers enough of a window to put some cushion between them. And so that would be a Trailblazers-Mavericks matchup, which I'm not really looking forward to in the first round. Warriors and Clippers, which I'm going to love to have popcorn for because I think that's going to be a contrast of styles. And then, of course, you know, those winners will have to play, face off the Lakers and Spurs. And I think everybody expects to see the Lakers and Spurs in the conference finals. And it's going to be superstar wars at that point. And we'll see how things go. So there you have it. That's my Western look at the Western Conference as we come out of the trade deadline. I'm hoping to have a little bit more time to get some more of these under my belt. I really do enjoy doing the chats with a cat and want to get back in the habit. It's just been ridiculously difficult. We'll see how the holidays treat me. I'm not sure if that's going to be better or worse. If I don't get another one of these out before the holidays, I hope everybody has happy holidays. And we will see you all in the playoffs. Good luck to everyone.